Friendship is a special kind of love. Now, one can talk about that, and then after the break, look at spiritual friendship. So friendship is a really special kind of love. It's a gift. You can't organise for it. You can't make people be friends. You all know what... You see some little children who are not... who think they can buy friends, and your heart, as your mother or a father, your heart goes out to them. You've got to try and help them see. No, you can't do that. You have to wait for friendship to come to you, really. And real friendship will come. But some people go out looking for it all the time and buying it with affection or with gifts or with... Well, I'm not saying that's bad, but it's got to be carefully looked at because it's not helpful and it's very hurtful stuff. Now, friendship is a gift. It's just a miracle each time, but it is a gift and we can't organise it. We can only be faithful to it as it comes and nurture it. Here's a lovely statement in the Gospel where Jesus, I think, beautifully honours friendship with this Peter. It's after Peter has denied Jesus three times. Peter made this big statement at the Last Supper. The others might let you down, Jesus, but I'll be there, mate, because I'm your friend. Trust me. I wouldn't trust the others too much, but I'll be there. And Jesus says, Pete, just hold it, will you? Will you talk a bit lower? Lower your voice. They're all listening. And by the time the night's out, mate, you're going to have three times that you don't even know me. Peter couldn't understand that. He did that. After the resurrection at the lakeside, Peter's come in and dragged the feet, and Jesus says, oh, Peter, he says, do you love me more than the others? He wasn't being sarcastic. He was, do you love me more than the others? Because Peter said he did love him more than the others. And the word Jesus uses for love is a love, it's the agape word. Do you, can I trust you? Are you faithful? Are you committed to this relationship? Are you going to be there for me? In a sense, he's saying, will you not deny me, you know? And Peter beautifully has learnt a lot. He says, Lord, you know I love you, but he doesn't use the same word. He uses the word phileo, friendship. You know I'm your friend. You know I care for you. You know my heart's with you. You know I really feel for you. You know I'm close to you. You know I can't live without you. It's all those loving, feeling words. That's me. But he's saying, but, you know, I don't know whether I'll be faithful or not. I made a mess of it yesterday. I could make a mess tomorrow. I don't want to. But he tells what his heart's like. Phileo, friendship. And Jesus says, that'll do me, mate. Feed my sheep. A heart relationship is enough for Jesus. But then he asks him again, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And again, it's the word agape, agapao. Do you, can I trust you? Will you be committed to me? Will you be there for me? Will you keep my commandments? Will you, because he's going to ask him to do a big job, a big commitment, a big authority, and authority is always painful. Parental authority, any authority is a burden to bear for those who need it. But Peter says again, Lord, you know I love you, and he changes the word. He won't answer Jesus because he is answering him and saying, no, I don't know. But I do love you, phileo, tend my sheep. And the lovely part of the sentence, Jesus then says, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Now he takes Peter's word. Do you really feel for me? Am I your friend? Is that how you feel? And Peter then, he doesn't mind Jesus asking, questioning the other, but he's not going to have this question. He says, oh, heavens, you know I love you. I mean, there's some things that are really clear. Of course I do. Jesus says, feed my sheep. So here's Jesus honouring this feeling of friendship, this heart-to-heart thing that's grown between them, even though friends and lovers can hurt each other and fall out and be unfaithful. But there is a real love here. I don't know whether you know this or not, I'll just read it to you. It's from Khalil Gibran, he's the Maronite in Lebanon. Poem on friendship. Your friend is your needs answered. He is your field which you sow with love and reap with thanksgiving. He is your board and your fireside. For you come to him with your hunger and you seek him for peace. When your friend speaks his mind, you fear not the nay in your own mind, nor do you withhold the I, the yes. And when he is silent, your heart ceases not to listen to his heart. For without words in friendship, all thoughts, all desires, all expectations are born and shared with joy that is unacclaimed. When you part from your friend, you grieve not. For that which you love most in him may be clearer in his absence, as a mountain is to the climber is clearer from the plain. And let there be no purpose in friendship save the deepening of the spirit. For love that seeks aught but the disclosure of its own mystery is not love, but a net cast forth, and only the unprofitable is caught. Let your best be for your friend. If he must know the ebb of your tide, let him know its flood also. For what is your friend that you should seek him with hours to kill? Seek him with hours to live. For it is his to fill your need, but not your emptiness. And in the sweetness of friendship, let there be laughter and sharing of pleasures. For in the dew of little things, the heart finds its morning and is refreshed. And finally, a statement from Henry Nguyen. When we honestly ask ourselves which persons in our lives mean the most to us, we often find that it is those who, instead of giving much advice, solutions or cures, have chosen rather to share our pain and touch our wounds with a gentle and tender hand. The friend who can be silent with us in a moment of despair or confusion, who can stay with us in an hour of grief or bereavement, who can tolerate not knowing, not curing, not healing, and face with us the reality of our powerlessness. No one can hurt us the way a friend can hurt us. And if a friend hurts you, don't say it's not happening. Take the hurt to your own heart. Be gentle with yourself. And trust the healing power of your own heart, for your heart is greater than the wound you wear. And be ready to forgive and to allow the healing that is in your heart to flow out to your friend. Friendship is too important to not be able to be really wounded and still grow from the wounds. It's too rare a gift to be without. Now move on to look more precisely at what we've tried to look at love a bit, and then friendship, this extraordinary miracle gift that we can have at different levels. Now let's look at spiritual friendship, a friendship of soul to soul. Usually, I would imagine that it builds on a natural friendship. They would expect to go together, where the attitudes of the other person and the reactions and conversation attracts you, even sensually, and I mean that in the best sense. It's a feeling thing as well as an intelligence and soul thing. So normally that kind of friendship might, if the two people are committed to, become a soul friendship, a friendship of that's spiritual. And here's some advice given, some criteria perhaps given by John of the Cross and Teresa and others I'll be talking about now. He said, the more you remember your friend, the more you remember the love of God, and the greater your desire to love God. If that's what's happening, then the friendship has a spiritual dimension that's precious. Another criterion that one can test by is rather beautifully expressed in the Gospel of John. It's about John the Baptist. And his disciples, John the Baptist, come to him and say, look, things are going wrong. They're all following Jesus. They're leaving us. And John the Baptist says, look, the one who has the bride is the bridegroom. The friend of the bridegroom, who stands and listens, rejoices when he hears the voice of the bridegroom. That's what he's there for. For this reason, he said, my joy has been fulfilled. I'm delighted they're going to Jesus. That's exactly what I wanted them to do. If that means going away from us, that's wonderful. So it's not possessive. It's not self. It's not holding someone to yourself. It's just wanting the person to grow near to God, whatever that might mean. And if it's mutual, well, then it's lovely. Teresa, in one of her letters, writes, I assure you that if you love me dearly, I return your love, and I like you to tell me of yours. This is a great mystic. How unmistakable a trait of our nature is this wish for our love to be returned. It can't be wrong, for our Lord wishes it too. In her life, she writes, it's a dreadful thing to be beset by so many dangers and to be alone. For this reason, I would advise those who practice prayer, that's what we're talking about in this series, I would advise those who practice prayer, especially at first, to cultivate the friendship and company of others of similar interest. Since people find comfort in the conversation and human sympathy of ordinary friendships, even when these are not of the best kind, I don't know why those who are beginning to love and serve God in earnest should not be allowed to discuss their joys and trials with others. And people who practice prayer have plenty of both. She's encouraging, in this case, her sisters, particularly in the many Carmelite convents, to have spiritual friends. In the Way of Perfection, which was written as a help to her Carmelite sisters in their prayer, and half of it is a commentary on the Our Father, but she talks about prayer, and then she says, well, do you think that such people will love and delight in no one except God? No, she says. This can happen, by the way, to a lot of people. Pardon me butting in on Teresa, but some people can find God and you end up losing them. The wife finds God and that's the end of it. She's off with God somewhere and poor old husband is now number three. Or whatever, there was a child and him, he didn't mind that. Now there's the God and child and him. It's nothing to do with that. It's nothing to do with first, second or third. To find God means to find everyone at depth, at their deepest mystery. So it's not God first and husband and wife second. She says, do you think that people who find they are in love with God, then that's the end of all this? No, she says. They will love others much more than they did. With a more genuine love, with greater passion, and with a love which brings more profit. That's what love really is, she says. We mustn't siphon God off as though God's outside, separate somewhere. That's not her, that's me. Back to Teresa. If they love anyone, they immediately look beyond the body, fix their eyes on the soul, and see what there is to be loved there. If there is nothing, but they see any suggestion or inclination which shows them that if they dig deep, they'll find gold in this mine, they think nothing of the labour of digging since they have love. It may be a spouse, it may be a friend, it may be a fiancé, it may be a child that you're teaching or caring for or something. And you see in them this potential, this capacity for love, then your love might inspire you to bring it out, draw it out. There's nothing, she says, which suggests itself to them which they will not willingly do for the good of that soul. And by soul she means the person themselves in their deepest longing. Since they desire their love for that person to be lasting, and they know quite well that it's impossible unless the loved one has certain good qualities and a great love for God. If love is to be eternal, it has to be love in God. This love is like that which was born for us by the good lover, Jesus. And Teresa continues, the heart of such friends doesn't allow them to practice duplicity. If they see their friend straying from the road or committing any faults, they will speak to their friend about it. They can't allow themselves to do anything else. Happy the souls that are loved by such as these. O my Lord, will you not grant me the favour of giving me many who have such love for me? Love to be truthful with me. Love such persons as much as you like. When one of you is striving after perfection, you will at once be told, this is what other people will tell them, and she's countering this advice, you'll be told that you have no need to know such friends, such people. It's enough to have God. But, says Teresa, to get to know God's friends is a very good way of having God. As I've discovered by experience, it's most helpful. It is this kind of love which I should like us to have. At first it may not be perfect, but the Lord will make it increasingly so. At first it may be mingled with emotion, but this as a rule will do no harm. It's sometimes good and necessary for us to show emotion in love. You'd hardly need to read that, I guess, except that some of us were advised there is a certain pseudo-spirituality around which doesn't talk like that, so it's good to hear this Teresa so simply as a woman speaking and saying, no, love's wonderful and friendship is wonderful, go for it, encourage it, it'll draw you nearer to God, it won't. It's not God all. It's God in and everything in God. So while staying with this spiritual friendship, just playing with it in a moment, I also want to read to you some statements by an American psychiatrist called Gerald May. He's written many good books from his psychiatric experience. The one I like best is the one I'm about to refer to. It's called The Awakened Heart. It's about prayer. And it's about prayer, though, written from a practitioner's point of view, dealing with people in all kinds of psychological situations. And so he's got a lot of not just intuition here, but practical awareness that he's reflecting on it. See if you like these three little statements that he gives here, the references are given here in The Awakened Heart. He writes, the heart yearns in simple, silent pleading. It yearns for action that doesn't mimic love, but springs forth from it. My single desire for God, single meaning it's pure and straight, one strand, not twisted. My single desire for God will be of more help to my friends because my single desire for God will give birth to the kind of action that will really help them. If you want to love your children well, become a saint. That'll help them more than anything. If you want to love your friends, pray. Be a person who's in communion with God. That will help them immensely. So this is your best way of loving friends, has this desire for God. It is not desiring God instead of doing helpful actions. They're not alternatives. It's desiring God as the source of actions that are going to be really helpful. What comes to you as an inspiration from God is going to help your friend a million times better than anything you could possibly think up. Because it's from God. It's that simple, says this man. If you put efficiency first, the world gets to be the way it is today. If you put love first, the whole meaning of efficiency is transformed. A little later in the same book, Gerald May writes, it's wonderful advice, I think. If we give ourselves more space between feeling and response, what good advice this is. How many times have you reacted where you felt something and said something and regretted what you said? Had an impulse to do something and did it before you put space in there. So give yourself more space between the feeling and what you do with it. Enter that space in a consecrated way. If we do that, we will find ourselves empowered for whatever response love calls for. I'm sure of it, he says. The power then is not just ours. It's the nuclear fusion of divine grace, which we've allowed in, or waited for it to bubble up. It's the nuclear fusion of divine grace with our dignified willingness. We're not putting ourselves down. We're not denying our feelings. We're owning it and honouring it. But we're opening it up to grace, and we're willing to listen and wait. We don't have to blurt anything out yet. And if we need space, we take it and then come back. Better than undoing all the hurt that goes on in the 5 minutes when we should have been outside. Authentic loving responsiveness invites us to turn our consciousness towards the exact point where our hearts are already looking. Because our hearts are made for God. If only we gave him a chance. There and only there is the wellspring of authentic responsiveness found. So if you want to be a good friend in the terms we're using tonight, I think there's some good advice for us. And finally, another statement from Gerald May in the same book. See if you like this. Go back over it later, test it, check it. Find your heart, he said, as best you can. Now, just the best you can do. Follow it, the heart, towards its source, the source of love, as much as you can. Consecrate yourself. In other words, be in the presence of God, consecrate, allow God to hold you in his own holiness, and trust. I'll go through that again. Find your heart as best you can, follow it towards the source of love as much as possible, consecrate yourself and trust. God's grace is present. God's love is irrevocable. Never take it back. You can trust it and you can trust yourself within it. There are no exceptions. There are no places inside you or in the whole of creation where God's love does not exist. God's love is alive in prisons, in hospital wards, in earthquakes, in hurricanes, in your own selfishness and addictions. It's always, God's love is always crying out to your heart, and your heart is awake, responding, so seek it and trust it. That is just so good.